great pleasure to be here at Perimeter. It's my first time visiting, and it's certainly a fantastic institution from everything that I've seen. So you guys work in a really nice environment. This is work that I would put out this week, except that there are too many interesting people to talk to this week, so I probably won't get to putting it on the archive, but probably next week you'll see it. And then, but it's mainly focused on some loopholes that I see in the current Higgs analyses that I think are interesting to point out and to discuss. So starting with the Higgs discovery, these two plots really make it for theorists because these are the Higgs to ZZ to four leptons analyses. And theorists really like to see the fact that you have a resonance if you just do what any kindergartner in particle physics would do, just form the mass, invariant mass of four leptons. And you see a nice peak here from ATLAS and a nice peak here from CMS. And it's obvious, you have a new particle, you have some new resonance, and now we want to study everything we can about it. A side question that I will not address because I don't have anything important to say about this is that really discovering a Higgs, or even if it is the standard model Higgs, sharpens the gauge hierarchy problem. So it still motivates the fact that we need to understand how is this Higgs so light and what stabilizes the electroweak scale. But more importantly, something that we can actually do and a great focus of all of our work is really understanding what is the nature of the Higgs. And the LHC at 13 TeV when it restarts in 2015 has this as one of its central tenets. Certainly you want to measure precisely everything you can, like the mass, the couplings, the CP properties, and doing it at the some people think that doing it at the LHC 13 TeV is insufficient for reasons, for theoretical reasons or their own biases. But some people also, these people will then say you need to have a future Higgs factory to really deal with these questions in detail. Separately, I'm just going to focus on what can you do with the LHC Higgs data set that we have now, as well as what we would get in the future. So I'm going to start by reviewing the current Higgs studies, and then I'll point out the loophole that I see, which is not currently really being tested or addressed in the experiments. And you can have gathered from the title that I'm going to explore the possibility of exotic production of the standard model Higgs. I'll do a specific case just as a benchmark scenario where you have Giorgino neutralino production from vanilla MSSM SUSY that gives you Higgs in the final state. And I'll discuss how the current constraints leave this as an open possibility and what possible effects this would have on the standard model Higgs searches. And then since we're fully exploring exotic production, I'm proposing some of the experimental tests that you would do in order to probe exotic production using the Higgs data set, and then I'll summarize. So in the experiments, you know at the end of the day, all you're going to have is some number of events. And the number of events comes from some production mode. In the standard model, you have five nominal important production modes from gluon fusion, BBF, WH, CH, and TTH. And then you choose some particular Higgs decay final state that you want to study and reconstruct your Higgs candidate with. Obviously, if you don't have a magical detector like theorists do, you can't exactly extract one particular production mode in a particular final state. So any given final state that you choose will have multiple production modes that are contributing. And it's well known, for example, that if you want to try to target the VBF category, you have some contamination from gluon fusion, whether you have tight or loose cuts on your digets, and you can have 20 to 50% contamination. That's well known. But that's an example of something that people already are aware of. You have multiple production modes contributing to any given final state. Parametrically, the reason this is important is because from your number of events, you want to extract something about the couplings of the Higgs to your final state particles and your initial state particles. So you have some scaling with G production squared, some scaling with G decay squared, and then you're dividing by the total width. The unfortunate thing is that the total width is not measurable at the LHC. And since you don't have a handle on the total width, you have to make assumptions about these couplings and how they behave, as well as some assumptions about this unobserved part of the width that you don't see or haven't tested, in order to really relate your measurements of the number of events to the couplings that you want to extract. As I should mention, there are some interesting proposals on the market for measuring the width of the Higgs that have to do with interference between, say, continuum backgrounds versus the intrinsic Higgs signal. These are very interesting, and they should be pursued. But for the moment, I'm just going to assume we'd have no actual measurement of the Higgs width. And the important thing that I think the experimentalists realize, although they may not realize all of the facets of this, is that they make some assumptions about the production modes as well as the decays in order to get their coupling fits. So for example, these are their latest coupling fits in the signal strength of gluon fusion plus TT Higgs, which is unimportant, versus the signal strength in VBF plus VH. And they have each of their final states listed here in separate ellipses with one sigma and two sigma contours, or just, I believe, two sigma here. And of course, signal strength is defined as the cross-section, the fiducial cross-section you expect, divided by the standard model expectation. UC divided by the standard model expectation. And the point is, combining separate final states has to require these assumptions about how much contamination of production you have in various modes. So aside from coupling fits to normal, say, standard model fields only and standard model rescalings, you can, a lot of theorists have pursued, say, higher dimensional operators and done constrained fits for these operators under some assumption about how these operators rescale according to couplings that you want to extract. So just as an example, if you're treating the light Higgs as a Goldstone boson, you have this set of operators pursued by these authors and more. And you can do this constrained fit with the assumption that, if you notice here, all of these fields are standard model-like, and therefore any new on-shell degrees of freedom are excluded in this fit. So if you have new physics that has new on-shell degrees of freedom, this fit is not the right basis to do your extraction. So the punchline so far, and the loophole that I see, is that coupling fits have all assumed that there's no new production mode for the Higgs. And in particular, the experimentalists, when they do their coupling fits, it sounds like they're doing a test of the standard model, which is correct, except that a signal strength different from one for them is new physics. And it's new physics with a very particular assumption. It's an assumption that the new physics only shows up as a rescaling of a standard model production mode. And it's easy to imagine that new physics does something very different. And to sharpen the statement, effective Lagrangians, especially when you do not add any new physics fields, do not include the possibility of on-shell states. So when you're going to explore exotic production of the standard model, you need to include on-shell new physics states, and you really open up the box in terms of what you can consider and constrain with the Higgs data set. So some clarifying comments that I may not need to make, because a lot of this past literature has been dropped with new Higgs data, but I'm considering real standard model Higgses, so I'm not considering, say, a difference between the gamma-gamma resonance and the ZZ resonance to explain some mass splitting. So these are not imposters, but they have non-standard kinematics, which means that they cannot be mapped to any particular rescaling of a given standard model production mode. I'm also assuming, for my purposes, that the new physics is not going to change any of the Higgs decay rates. So this just means that I have no new on-shell degrees of freedom below half the Higgs mass, and I don't significantly change the loop-induced decays to gamma, gamma, or glu-glu. But there will be changes in the final state analyses because I am changing the kinematics of your standard model Higgs. Yes?
When you say partial widths, do you mean partial widths or branch efficiency?
The standard model Higgs partial widths. And since I'm not
so
introducing.
So you're saying then the standard model production mechanisms are unaffected?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not changing the standard model production modes at the moment. I'm not adding an invisible width. I'm not adding an unobserved width. So everything about what you expect from Higgs decays is the same. I'm just injecting a contamination from some new production mode. I will get to some plots later, but basically non-standard kinematics means you're producing a Higgs with a PT distribution that doesn't look like it comes from gluon fusion, doesn't look like it comes from VBF, doesn't look like WH or ZH or TTH. So I have some slides later that will show, say, how you discriminate for different production modes. But one simple thing is in the past literature, which I'll discuss on this slide, a lot of people have proposed that you have Higgs's arising cascade decays of Suzy particles. And if the mass splitting between your parent particle and your daughter particle is large, that gives you a Higgs, then the Higgs comes out very boosted, and so it has non-standard kinematics because you don't typically get boosted Higgs's in the standard model. But boosted Higgs's have their own separate category for searches. And in particular, a lot of these boosted Higgs searches look in the BB bar channel, where you do as a jet substructure technique, and you can reconstruct a resonance because you have much nicer and non-standard kinematics. The point that I'm trying to make is that in all of these studies, there's a part of parameter space where instead of having a boosted Higgs, you drive this mass splitting smaller between a parent particle and a daughter particle, such that the Higgs doesn't come out very boosted, and it's hard to distinguish it from a standard model-like production mode. And so there's a region of parameter space where you have exotic Higgs production. Higgs doesn't come out too boosted, and a dedicated boosted search will not find it, because dedicated boosted searches are not sensitive to standard model-like kinematics. But on the other hand, you do contaminate the current searches, which is what I think is really interesting. And I'll just show two examples from Vanilla Suzy as a proof of principle. So if you think about how do you construct exotic production of a standard model Higgs, you can think of it just in terms of rates. So you start out with a production rate, a production cross-section that can be huge, and then you just have to adjust in order to not be completely ruled out. You have to adjust the efficiency for selecting these Higgs events to be tiny. And one example of this could be things that have, say, displaced Higgses in your calorimeter, for example, where you're insensitive at the moment. There's no analysis that will test for a Higgs that decays in your calorimeter with a displaced vertex. On the other hand, you can skip to the bottom, where you have a subdominant new physics cross-section compared to standard model production cross-sections, in which case you wouldn't see it, so why would you talk about it? If it's subdominant to any of the rates here, even if you saturate the efficiency to 100%, you're not gonna be able to see these events. So the interesting case that I'm going to consider is where you have a new physics cross-section that's comparable to, say, one of the standard model production modes. And for my case, I'm going to choose WH, and I'm going to see what are the efficiencies for this new production mode to fall into any of the standard model Higgs analyses. One point to make is that gluon fusion obviously is the big one in the room. It's order 20 picobarns at 8 TeV. And one thing that will be a theme is if you have a uncertainty on the gluon fusion rate on the order of 10% coming from QCD and alpha S and PDFs, then it's very hard to argue why you're not contaminating gluon fusion at the order of 10% from some new physics rate. You'll not be able to disentangle a 10% contamination from a new physics production mode. obviously all these others are more suppressed, but they also come with additional handles in order to test the kinematics, like VBF has digets that are far apart and have a large invariant mass. WH and CH oftentimes have leptons and or MET. And so dedicated searches for these have sensitivity to exotic production modes that look similar and have similar rates to these. There's actually a fourth category, which relates to an earlier question from Jared, where I have both modified decays and exotic production. And my point here is we could be in a situation where, say, gluon fusion is suppressed from the introduction of light stops or some new colored particles, but we simultaneously have some new physics cascade decay that turns on. And so we might measure an overall rate that's consistent with the standard model. But if we actually looked in detail into the kinematics of the Higgses we get, we find that the kinematics of the Higgs is not exactly like gluon fusion. And so it's very natural to consider complete new physics models where this happens, but it's beyond the scope of what I'm going to talk about today. So concretely, we're going to look at Chargino neutralino production at the LHC. The dominant diagram is through a W star that just produces a Chargino and a second lightest neutralino. Second lightest neutralino decays to the LSP via a Higgs or a Z, and then the Chargino decays basically 100% through a W. And here I'm going to forbid intermediate leptons, so these are really the only possible decays. In terms of rates, if I set the Chargino and the neutralino to be degenerate, which is what happens if you make it dominantly Wino, then this W star production of Chargino neutralino associated production is falls like this. And it can be ordered 10 picobarns at 8 TeV if you have Charginos at the LEP limit or thereabouts. But it doesn't fall too much. And in terms of the rates to consider, if you look at the standard model rate for W Higgs production, at 126.5 GeV, then you roughly cross at about 200 GeV. So anything with Charginos and heavy neutralinos lighter than 200 GeV will intrinsically have a cross section that's larger than WH. And the important thing is, can we test that? Can we exclude it? Can we find it? Can we discover something? In case you're curious, you can also do Z star and gamma mediated chi plus, chi minus production. That's roughly a factor of 2 lower. And it would give you a final state of WW, obviously, plus MET. And you could talk about contamination of the WW cross-section measurements, which people have done. For example, Patrick Mead and collaborators have talked about this discrepancy between the measured WW cross-section and the NLO prediction. Yes? So it's Bino is LSP, Wino is Chargino neutralino at the heavier state.
Okay, so then Higgsinos decouple.
Higgsinos are heavier, and yeah. The thing is, this falls off so quickly that even if you make it 400 GeV, for example, as you probably know, the cross section falls off rapidly.
Remind me what kind of branching ratio to Higgs?
So, branching ratio for my benchmarks. I'm taking to be, say, 40% to Z and 60% to Higgs, or I can push it up to even 82 and 17. And these are some just vanilla MSSM Sugra type models that I just plugged in to try to get a large Higgs rate.
Okay, so remind me roughly what's controlling the Higgs to Z ratio?
So the coupling between neutralino 2 to neutralino 1 with a Higgs is some complicated mess involving how much mixing it has. The Z is easier because you need to have a Higgsino content in the neutralinos in order to have a Z exchange. And so if I turn off as much as I can the Z content by, say, pushing nu higher, then there's no Higgsino content in any of these neutralinos, and I just turn off the Z.
Okay, so
raising
the Higgsino suppresses the Z, but keeps
yes.
The Higgs, there's some irreducible.
Yes. Because you have the off-diagonal 2 by 2 block with G and G prime and V with 10 beta in there. And that always induces some off-diagonal contribution. That it, I mean, that's the irreducible Higgs-Zeno mixing that I can't really turn off, right?
Yeah, so if you decouple the Higgs-Zeno, what dominates the Higgs, where does the Higgs interaction come from?
Where does the Higgs interaction come from? The Higgs is always there. It's a sum over all of the neutralino mixing angles. I could get you the expression, but...
They have similar scaling. I would think they have similar scaling to you. Maybe that's not right. Anyway.
Yeah. I could point you probably to a reference by Tauhan and collaborators that show the large mean limit. But I can.
All right. Anyway, I don't want to interrupt with that.
Yeah. So, So if you look at this, you obviously look and see that these charginos and neutralinos are order hundreds of GeV, and so it's very accessible. You have order picobond cross-sections, and you would immediately think, why don't I just look for this in, say, multi-leptons? And they do. So the current status of multi-lepton searches for the WZ final state plus MET from ATLAS and CMS show these contours, and they in these limits, they're using a 100% branching fraction to Z plus LSP and W plus LSP. And so this is the degenerate Charginio neutralino, heavy neutralino axis, and this is the LSP mass axis. And you see that certainly they're cutting out a large part of this region. Similarly with CMS in the multi-lepton final state. But of course, if you turn the question around and ask, what if I start decreasing the branching fraction to Z plus LSP, and I turn on Higgs, they have a separate search, where again, in this search, we're assuming 100% branching fraction to Higgs plus LSP. The bounds are significantly weaker compared to before, mainly because what they're doing is they're removing, say, a standard model W Higgs production using an MTW-like cut. It's very strong. In particular, you see that they die off to have really no sensitivity at the mass splitting where the heavy neutralino and the light LSP are split by a Higgs mass. And the same thing here. But that's really the interesting case, because as you start to squeeze the spectrum, is the normal terminology, as you start to squeeze the spectrum and make the Higgs more and more on shell in terms of, on shell's the wrong word, more and more at threshold in terms of its decay, then you're making its kinematics more and more standard model-like. And that's the situation I'm going to focus on. So the benchmarks that I'm going to do, I have model A and model B. First model has Charginio neutralinos of roughly 200 GeV. Second one has roughly 230 GeV. And in both cases, I'm adjusting the LSP mass so that the mass splitting between the chi2 and the chi1 is roughly a Higgs mass, so that the Higgs doesn't come out very boosted. Same thing here. You can see the branching fractions here calculated via Suzy Hitt. And then the cross sections are basically, as you've seen before, they're order half or 0.4, 0.3 picobarns at 8 TeV. And so they're on the order of the W Higgs cross section. So signal generation, I use MadGraph 5 and I implement all of the cut and count analyses from ATLAS and CMS for diphotons, ZZ and WW, final states. It's important to note that if you're trying to disentangle production modes from the standard model versus new physics, you want to use a high resolution final state, something where you reconstruct everything with good resolution. Otherwise, differences in shapes become very smeared, and it's not easy to disentangle a new physics production mode from a standard model one. As an aside, there are the tau tau and BB analyses to usually MVA type or BDT like. And so it's intractable for me to try to reproduce them and get an efficiency. But these are just going to illustrate how do you categorize a new production mode in terms of what you see and how you categorize standard model searches. So the one with the most information are the diphoton analyses. Atlas has separate categories for one lepton, a high MET significance, a light MJET-JET for vector boson-associated processes, a VBF tag, and then a catch-all for gluon fusion. CMS just breaks up the leptons into muon and electron tag, breaks up the VBF into tight and loose, has a MET category and then an untagged category. And these are the efficiencies. So I take the full production of W Higgs plus MET for my signal, and then I just simulate and ask how often does it pass the cuts to fall into these bins. Most often it falls into the MET bin, as would be expected, because I do have escaping chi1s that carry away some MET. And because I'm adjusting the mass splitting between the degenerate chargino and neutralino to the LSP to be the Higgs mass, that means there is some amount of phase space for the W to carry away a bit of a boost, and when it decays leptonically, it gives me some MET. Model A is chargino's at 200, LSP 65. Model B is chargino's 230, LSP at 100. With these merging fractions. Yes, so the point is the kinematics are going to be roughly the same. So you should be, I'm just trying to test, do the efficiencies tell me that? But just, the rates are going to scale down as I keep increasing the mass scale. So this is also a self-consistency check between kinematics. So obviously these efficiencies are not that different from here. And in the backup, if you're curious, I have some preliminary standard model efficiencies that I've reconstructed from the diphoton analyses, but I don't know of an official standard model efficiencies table from the experiments. In terms of overall rate, these are only percentages. You expect, say, 17 events for model A and 20 events for model B. So these are only contaminations on the order of a few events. But that's just because, in principle, I could crank up the cross-section to be comparable to gluon fusion, but that would certainly be ruled out. What's more interesting here is that what kinematics give you what efficiencies in which bin. For completeness, I'm also presenting the ZZ and WW analyses. These are the efficiencies. Most often you're tagged as, say, gluon fusion for ZZ, secondarily as VH production, or NJETs less than 2 for CMS. But this ZZ rate for my particular production mode is small, so there's really no significant contamination of this analysis. And even with, say, 750 events for the Higgs decay to L nu JJ, after you apply these efficiencies in the WW searches, they become older an event, which is also not significant. So we can look more at the diphoton, and I can explain to you what's important about the diphoton analysis and how is this useful in terms of constraining new physics. So obviously the diphoton analysis has a lot of statistics, and so it's used to categorize according to associated objects and the kinematics of the photons. It's used to categorize the events according to particular production modes, assuming only standard model. And this is the kind of flowchart that you see in the Atlas gamma-gamma analysis. They start off by selecting high PT leptons. Then they, from the remaining events, they select high MET events. Anything that fails that then is tested for a low-mass dijet to be a W or Z candidate. Then they look at VBF, category VBF type events. And then the catch-all, as I said before, is gluon fusion. And so now if you turn it around and look at it from a new physics perspective, if I don't have a hard lepton, if I don't have too much MET characteristically, if I don't have a Z or W dijet candidate, and if I don't have a VBF tag, then the experiment will think, or this analysis will think, that I just have introduced a new gluon fusion production mode, which is the one that has, in some sense, the most room to play with, because you can both play with changing the interference in the loop for production with new physics, as well as just play with the theory uncertainty on the calculation of the gluon fusion rate. Obviously, each category, as I mentioned before, has contamination from other standard model production modes, and you see that explicitly in the tables they present with bins. And I should reemphasize, since a new physics production mode will have a different efficiency going through this cut table than a standard model production mode, you can't then use a rescaling of a standard model signal strength in order to capture all of the new physics effects. So some table that you might see, for example, is here, where you see the
Because you would see it would show up in part as a rescaling, right? That might be the first.
So yeah.
First
so
way
if it
showed up, if you weren't looking very hard.
Yeah. So the point is, suppose you have W. I'll show this later. Suppose you have WH. I should draw it here. For example, if this is the Higgs PT. And then you have something that has a very similar similar shape from new physics. Then these are similar enough that you would expect all of the associated kinematics to get tagged at roughly the same efficiency. The question is, at what level does that break in terms of rescaling just WH?
Right. So are you worried about, for example, changing the relative efficiencies between the different VH
yes.
and REH bits?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So. In my backup, for example, you'll see that certainly if I rescaled anything, I can't get, the thing I would have to rescale to get this MET to match would be the ZH. But then I'd have to rescale it so much that it doesn't fit any of the, say, if I had a dileptone category or anything else.
What's the story again? These signatures shown up in non-Higgs analysis?
Non-Higgs analyses.
Final state is
a
W Higgs plus
meta. Yes. So if you have a non-Higgs, you have non-Higgs analyses where you have, say, let me distinguish between non-standard model Higgs and no Higgs candidates at all. So for no Higgs candidates at all, you might look for, say, W plus BB, but those searchers are very insensitive because you have a TT bar background. For example. And then I've arranged the kinematics such that if you try to have a boosted Higgs in the BB channel, then this would not pass any of the boosted cuts because none of the Higgs end up boosted. The alternative channel to look for, say, is just the Chargino-Chargino production, which has a non-negligible rate. We would look for it in the WW mode.
Yes, sir. How about the multi-lepton final state, which analysis?
Yeah, so the multi-lepton is the WZ final state plus MET.
Right.
And these are the searches. But you have to rescale these to the branching fractions in my particular model points.
Okay.
And if you do that, for example, well, you don't really need to even do that because if I look at, say, 265, I'm somewhat in this pocket. But then I rescale the ZZ, the Z branching fraction, down to 40% instead of 100%. And this does get significantly shifted inwards.
If you look at the Exotica multi-lepton searches, because those, I mean, presumably what's telling me here is that you're looking for a sizable amount of MET, whereas some...
No, so these are from the multi-lepton retranslated.
From what?
They're the same analysis. They're retranslated from one to another, as far as I know. This is the interpretation in the simplified model plane of the multi-lepton analysis.
Looking for, so is it finally, but those look for leptons and then some matter, I don't know, 50 or 100 Jerv or so.
No, they bend.
Yeah, this is three leptons, for example, and they don't need to have, they have met bends from, say, 0 to 50, 50 to 100, but they use all of them in combination to get these shapes.
Did you look at both assets and CMS? I seem to remember that they
see
CMS.
CMS is on the right. And if I look at, well, if I here, if I look at 265, I'm also going to be safe if I push the Z branching fraction down to 40%.
Do you know what's killing the signal efficiency here?
What's killing the signal efficiency? So I would have to go more into detail. You can already tell some features where the leptons have to be hard enough in order to be close to here.
But those, I mean, I'm
for, say, the WZ background.
They also have small excess, right?
This one from the CMS's omnibus charging an OO electric, you know, search, right?
Yeah.
That's not done by the electric group. Right. Doing
so the Broca's group goes down to lepton thresholds like 7 GeV or so, right? And really
some
low band, really low HD.
Okay.
And this is where this would be excluded by that analysis.
Well,
yeah, I think you're right, but that analysis has not been done yet. At least that it hasn't been done.
The multi-lepton analysis from the exotic group?
The exotic, yeah, the cut table and stuff exists, but the interpretation for this generator does not exist yet.
Right, but it's just a cut and count search, right? You can.
Right, you can, of course, recast it.
Right.
Yeah, I would be surprised if you get stronger, significantly stronger than this. Because you have to, in some sense, select basically the same events.
I wouldn't be surprised. But...
Okay. So, here, not being able to rescale a standard model production mode to capture new physics events, new physics effects means that, as before, if your rate is largely controlled by the Maskell-Suzy partners, then you can, in some sense, just inject a new physics rate with some new physics efficiencies that you calculate once and expect that the decay objects will give similar kinematics and similar efficiencies. And from looking at the previous efficiency tables, R parity conserving Suzy, even if the mass splittings for the Higgs to decay, even if those are small, will be typically limited by how often this is going to be tagged as a MET-like event. So when you look at the counts from the diphoton analysis and you look at the MET significance bin, they see 8 events in data. They expect 4 background, and they expect, say, 1.2 signal events. But you can already use this cut and count analysis to constrain how much high MET events can I have in the diphoton analysis. Assuming all of these 8 come from signal, then I can't have 9, I can't have 10, assuming some statistics. In particular, you can use this to constrain Targino neutralino production closer to the Higgs mass splitting line that they haven't done. It's obvious as well that R parity violating Suzy will not have this issue because you certainly will take away a lot of the MET significance counts. And so you would expect that you would construct models that are dominantly going to contaminate gluon fusion because it is the catch-all bin in these analyses. And it again,
to populate the digestives?
Yes, yes. So I'm making the statement that suppose I took this and now made the Beano's, say, RPV,
right.
Then I will populate any bin that's below this to some new efficiency.
Right.
And if I fall into this, then I'll bump this up.
Right, but I would expect that since the gluon fusion cross-section starts out so much higher, you might still be most sensitive to the corrections
yes.
of the jet.
Yes.
The digest nets.
Yes, that's true. And it is certainly more motivation for continued theory work on reducing these uncertainties in the gluon fusion rate, because the simplicity of contaminating gluon fusion makes it important to really nail down the theory uncertainties on the gluon fusion rate as well as possible. So now, proceeding on to tests, how would you test for a new physics production mode? Well, the answer comes from just looking at counts and kinematics of associated objects, X. So X could be leptons, jets, photons, MET, whatever you like. And for example, ATLAS has published, only fairly recently, their differential distribution of Higgs candidates in the gamma-gamma sample. And here they're showing, say, the PT of the hardest jet for the one jet and two jet, et cetera, categories. And you see rough agreement with what you expect from Pauhegg plus Pythia 8 and LL plus Barton shower in these purple hashed regions. And the black is, of course, the data. But it's still too early to make any significant claims about how discrepant this is, whether you need to inject some new physics that has some, say, high PT jets associated with your Higgs candidate. Certainly, once we go up to 100 inverse frontal barns at 13 TeV, this will be much clearer. Yeah, so they do a fairly complicated analysis of background PDFs and signal PDFs to extract signal candidates and subtract off this continuum background in a large mass window to try to get these events. But there's order 600 events in this histogram because the binning is with GEV. One other interesting observable, there's a lot of them, but one other interesting observable that they publish is the PT of the gamma-gamma candidate. And once again, it's important to do these types of analyses in high-resolution final states because here you can really get some good shape information. This, I think, is striking. The prediction from gluon fusion is here, and their data is in black, and these are the residuals when you do the ratio. Part of this is just because ATLAS sees a gamma-gamma excess. So in principle, you would want to rescale the standard model up to what they see if you just expect a new physics increase in the gamma-gamma signal strength. But there are there's a moderate shape discrepancy, but it's still way too early to say anything concrete because these error bars are huge. Similarly, CMS has done the PT in the four leptons, in the four lepton analysis divided by the mass of the four leptons, which is roughly, you would expect, just if you wanted 126.5 this year or so. And it's certainly consistent, but the error bars are huge because the statistics are much worse. The important point is that they should publish the rest of these. ATLAS should publish the ZZ events in the PT spectrum. CMS should publish the gamma-gamma if they can, because we're always statistics limited at the beginning. But an interesting talk I heard by Mankano at Fermilab pointed out that UA1, which was way before I was born, I think, when they discovered the Z, they published the transverse momentum of Z because they had a new particle. They wanted to study its kinematics. And they published this with order 20 event-ish. Sorry. This was after I was born. UA1 itself was built before I was born. Yes. So, but because we're at the beginning stage doesn't necessarily mean we can't do these and look at how they evolve with more data. So for example, if I'm trying to do a comparison between my model A and model B, I look at the PT spectrum, and by construction, of course, these PT, diphoton PTs, after all cuts, look very similar just because of the kinematics. But what it would do is it would fit under this green XH line, which is the rest of the subleading contributions. So I couldn't explain anything of this magnitude because I need to compete with a gluon fusion rate. But if all of these error bars shrank to their central values with more data, then certainly it would be fruitful to try to explain this different shape with some new physics. Moreover, the other differential distribution you want to look at is, of course, MET, and how much MET is produced in association with your objects, with your Higgs candidates. And here I'm showing theory-level predictions for standard model W Higgs, standard model Z Higgs, and then model A and model B. And you see that most of these distributions are basically on top of each other, once again, somewhat by construction. But it does lead to the fact that these two red and blue models, new physics models, get tagged more often as MET, even if there's a slight shift in their overall peak of the MET distribution. In any case, there have been some flashes of rumors, not even real rumors, that sometimes they see anomalous MET in their events. Never, even if those rumors are false, I want to urge the experiments to publish the MET that they see for Higgs candidates.
Didn't they do that at some point in one of the later analyses?
The MET distribution, I have not seen one.
No?
No. They have shown, for example, in the 13 inverse femtobarn analyses, they show event displays for 8 4 lepton events or something. And they give you the four momenta, and they tell you the MET, and some of them have 120 GeV of MET. So I would want the full thing anyways. But once again, if you're going to try to disentangle shapes that are this similar, you can't use a low resolution channel. You have to use something with high resolution, like four leptons or gamma-gamma. So even though BB might have more statistics, it's probably not going to be useful for these kinds of studies. And I'll close with some comments to wrap up. First of all, what happens at a lepton collider? Obviously, lepton colliders have a much cleaner production mode because they have sensitivity to the total width, and they can just test production rates by scanning over root S. So for example, from the ILC TDR, with some particular beam polarization assumptions, you have the dominant ZH production, and then you have the subleading contamination from WW and ZZ fusion. But if there is some new physics production that also enters here from some coupling to leptons, you could just test it by just scanning, which you can do. And so it's very easy to disentangle an exotic production mode at a lepton collider. Which also makes the point that hadron and lepton collider data sets in terms of the Higgs are very complementary and are orthogonal. If nobody ever tested for exotic production mode and we ended up with central values of extracted couplings very different at a lepton collider versus a hadron collider, a natural explanation would be that the hadron collider events are contaminated by some new physics production that isn't showing up in a lepton collider. One final note is that if you're going to now project and try to compare hadron and lepton colliders, as has been done for the past few months, in terms of the snow mass process, then you have to implicitly say that there are no new production modes that turn on, even subleading standard model production modes. So for example, the top Higgs production, single top plus Higgs production in the standard model is an order of magnitude smaller than the TTH production. But if you're going to start projecting up to 3 inverse autobarns, then you will have some sample of single top events that may contaminate, say, your TTH measurement. And you could even enhance it if you wanted with new physics. So to summarize, exotic Higgs production, I think, is realistic and motivated. It's an important prospect to possibly discover with current and future data. and the inability to directly, say, control your Higgs production at a hadron collider means you can really have a lot of freedom in terms of how new physics enters for this exotic production. And the biggest punchline is that we need to use the current Higgs data set to test for exotic production modes. You obviously want to test via kinematics like PT of the Higgs, AD of the Higgs, and with the associated objects. The caveat that I think should be made explicit is that experimental coupling tests already assume a particular form of the new physics as a rescaling of known production modes, and that assumption needs to be tested. And improving theory uncertainties is really going to help us if we see some discrepancy in some of the shapes we see or some of the rates we see. And it's exciting because it could be the initial signature, the powerful signature of new physics in the current data. Thanks.
Have you thought about how some DMSP searches would affect these results and whether they're manipulating that search?
Yeah, so in terms of exotic production modes for Higgses.
I just mean the standard GMSP searches that are with
okay.
iPhotons and that.
Yes, so those I would call Higgs imposters in some sense. Well, not really imposters in what normal people call imposters. But you can have contamination of the Higgs data set from just new physics that looks like...
Sorry, I don't think I'm explaining.
Okay.
I'm asking if your particular model, if you've considered how that is constrained by the GMSB searches.
By the GMSB searchers.
And other, you know, backfoot
So searches. My general attitude is that if there's a cut in a new physics search that removes standard model Higgs as a background, then it will have basically no sensitivity to these types of models. Because I've constructed these types of models to look very much like standard model Higgs events. Obviously, there is some bleed into how much different my models are from real standard model Higgses. But from what I've seen in terms of the kinematics that I compare my events to standard model-like events, I can do some checks, but I'm pretty sure that they will fail any other searches that remove standard model Higgses.
So I'll ask, if you had to boil down to two or three new distributions of results, what are the sort of the few new results that you think would really help to find these processes if they're there?
PT. So the nice thing about the Higgs is that the width is so narrow you can really factorize decay in production. So from the production side, if you want to test, you want to look at the PT of the Higgs candidate. You want to look at the MET in the event, so a global event variable. And then you want to look at, say, just raw counts, how many jets was produced with the Higgs, how many leptons, and other things like that. And that by itself will have some standard model distributions, and you can already start to see in just overall rates and the shapes of PT and MET whether you have some discrepancy worth checking.
Okay, and how well settled are the standard model PT and MET? Keep hearing of people like Lance Dixon and Ira Rothstein working on these calculators.
Yeah.
It makes me think there's still a lot to do.
So certainly it's done at NLL with, I think, NNLL calculations for gluon fusion. But in terms of the just for the overall rate, but in terms of the differential distribution, this here is just NLL plus parton shower. And I don't know if this is a matched parton shower at NLO. It may just be a leading
odd. Effect, at least for like PT of the Z, there's a big resummation effect.
Yeah.
It cuts it off
yeah.
the PTs, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm not...
I guess that's kind of taken into account by the parton shower.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in how and the current status of all of these differential distribution calculations, but certainly there's a lot of attention paid to the overall rate. Differential distributions, I think, is lacking to a certain extent.
Okay.